Welcome, friends. James Corbett, CorbettReport.com, February 10th, 2016. And today we're going to be joined by an old friend of the show that we haven't talked to in a while, but I hope you've been keeping up to date with him and his goings on. But if not, we're here to fill you in on them. I'm talking about the one, the only, the Jack Blood of the Jack Blood Show at DeadlineLive.info and RadioFreeBlood.com? Question mark? I'm going there right now and I'm getting a PDF library page. Jack, what's going on?
James, thank you so much for having me on. You're my brother from another mother. And, you know, I'm here in the Pacific Northwest. So as Sarah Palin says, I can see you from my backyard.
Pretty much. So let's tell people about what's going on in your world. It's been a while since we've had you on the program. People are trying to follow you around the dial. I understand you have some new ventures coming here and you are maybe not at RadioFreeBlood.com anymore.
Yeah, RadioFreeBlood.com basically got stolen from us, and we no longer have it, though it's another monkey off my back. It's another brick out of my bag. That's how I look at it, right? There's always a silver lining in that chemtrail, if you really find it.
It's a good way to put it. But you are still at DeadlineLive.info.
DeadlineLive.info, and we're just telling people Radio Free Blood on Facebook, and I know that irks you because you're not on Facebook, though the fake James Corbett is very mad at you, from what I hear.
I refuse to believe there's anyone else on this planet with my name, so.
Right. Well, we're all cousins, so we'll go there.
There you go.
But, nothing really new other than we're getting really creative. And here in Seattle, we're putting a team together to do some direct action. You know, I know a lot of people aren't going to believe this, James, but I live in a very progressive city that is extremely regressive on its citizens. So we're kind of going to use the progressive city against itself and call them out here on their regressive policies. And that has to do with, taxing your food. There's a 10% food tax here. You know, I can go right on down the line. There's 100% tobacco tax, which, you know, affects the poor. There's a 50% alcohol tax that affects the poor. And as we know, if the property taxes through gentrification go up and up and up, that cost gets shoveled down. It does trickle down to the poor, to the renters. So we're having a lot of problems here in this wonderful progressive city that is growing way faster than people can keep up with. And we're hoping with Bryce Shanka, if you remember him, he's one of the founders of the 10th Amendment Center. He lives here and American Freedom Radio is here. So we have a lot of good people here. We're looking to do that. And I've been, you know, getting back in touch with my artistic side, writing and playing a lot of music up here too. As far as our you know, information piece goes, that's what I call what I do, and it's not a war, it's peace. You know, we're still doing the research, we're still doing podcasts and report, and people can find that on our Radio Free Blood channel at Mixler, but you just go to Radio Free Blood on Facebook. And thanks for the, I guess, plug. I'm not really here to plug anything, James, so, but best I can do.
Well, no, I want to know what's going on, and that is so interesting because, of course, the Pacific Northwest, I think, pretty famous for being, at least in the major cities, if not in the rural parts, certainly very progressive, Seattle, Portland, quote-unquote progressive, of course. So it's interesting to see how you can use that against itself, the momentum of that. But from what I understand, they're all on board with the taxes, aren't they? They love those taxes. Because
not
they're
really. No, there's a huge backlash. It's just that it's kind of like the Bernie Sanders phenomenon. People don't know what to do, so they're looking for somebody to help them and, you know, put that flag in the ground and to be their champion when we know that's not going to happen. And the more phony progressiveness we have, the worse things get for those of us in the lower rungs of economic society, right? So what have we done? We lived in the last, 10, 12, 13 years, we lived in Austin, Texas, a progressive city, got driven out of there by high rents and progressiveness, okay? Then we moved to Atlanta, Georgia. That went at light speed, James. That was a depressed city that, while the 3 years we lived there, turned into overpriced gentrification. And here we are in Seattle, in my hometown, and we found that, you know, it's been feeding off of this same beast for a long time. So it is our strategy. It's the same way of kind of using global warming and climate change at people to address things like geoengineering and some of the more, I guess, nascent components of the debate. So I like using their strategy against themselves. And if I had a little bit of help, I think we could do it.
Well, far be it for me to bring up the four-year presidential distraction that's going on even as we record this right now. Of course, it's primary night in New Hampshire, so let's all talk about the next puppet that's being selected. I hate to talk about it, but it is, I think, relevant to the conversation. Are you feeling the burn there?
Well, it's an interesting topic. Not really. I've been debunking the burn, but it's weird because as a kind of Rand Paul supporter, I'm not an endorser. I just wanted there to be somebody in the debate that would have a little bit different take on geopolitics and civil liberties or constitutional rights, as we call them in this country. And so it was refreshing, even though he's been somewhat compromised, that being Rand Paul, it was refreshing to have him in the debates and saying things like, we created ISIS, you know, we're funding and paying for ISIS. You know, these are things that we Americans need to hear a lot more of. And of course, what happened to him, which is a really interesting story, I think it would make a good documentary or a book sometime. And I'm talking to the guy that does the Real History Channel, James Corbett. Forget the History Channel. Get this guy, James Corbett, because your documentaries are far superior to any, you know, propaganda that we see on the History Channel. So I was debunking the burn. And then I was supporting Rand, but Rand dropped out, and we can get into why it did maybe be a waste of airtime, but essentially was threatened for his Senate seat in Kentucky and had to go back home and kind of, you know, bring up the drawbridge and put sharks in the moat to defend himself. And I'm glad that he's doing that. But it was interesting to see that who would get his support, and maybe it's not a lot of support. He didn't get any of the counties in Iowa that his dad did except for one. And Trump and Cruz kind of divided up that pie, which, you know, again, shows you this phony ISIS, which I think took Rand out. No more doves. We don't want any guys careful about foreign policy, James, because ISIS could come get us and we have to do something. I think that's the point I was trying to make here a second ago. But it's interesting to see that I think a lot of the Rand supporters that are real Paul supporters are going to Bernie Sanders. There's just no one else to even hang your hat on. And right now, as we speak, he is blowing Clinton out in New Hampshire. So there's definitely an excitement there that I think is very similar to what we saw in 2012 with Ron Paul. Now, you remember how that ended. Voters don't pick the nominee. The media, the delegates, and the party pick the nominee. So he won't get the nomination, of course, but however, it is an interesting phenomenon here, whether people are just falling for it like mass drugging or mass hallucination or groupthink or it's really something, I don't know. But the people I do know that know Bernie say he's honest. He means what he says. I just happen to think he's wrong about it. But at least his intentions are supposedly good.
Yes. Well, this is interesting because I saw just after Rand dropped out, I think Ron, he didn't endorse Bernie or anything, but he did say something like, there's no libertarians left, and Bernie's probably one of the best picks out there. I don't want to say that without quoting him directly. On occasion, Bernie comes up with libertarian views when he talks about taking away the cronyism on Wall Street, so in essence, he's right, and occasionally he voted against war. It's hard to find anybody, since Rand is out of it, anybody that would take a libertarian position, hardcore libertarian position on privacy, on the war issue, and on economic policy. So I always say you can search for a long time, but you're not going to find anybody in the Republican or Democratic primary that even comes slightly close to ever being able to claim themselves a libertarian. Well, there you go. Kind of a mixed message, but...
Right. And libertarianism is another ism and really isn't the be all end all. So maybe we need to, you know, get away from that, because what good has it done us this last 15, 20, 30 years? Really?
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm not interested in this 4-year distraction as it goes on. But yes, I mean, it's at the very least, it opens up the conversation to different ideas and to letting people know, oh yeah, you know, the U.S. created ISIS. Maybe we should be talking about that instead of who's going to bomb them more.
Bernie is an Israel firster, and no getting away from that. And if you even talk about the plight of the Palestinians, he gets very angry. He goes kind of a little bit John McCain on people. He's got that very unstable demeanor going on in his character, where if you challenge him a little bit, he does seem to lose it. And maybe that's not the guy we want in office reading scripts, playing golf and cutting ribbons and giving speeches. But oh, did I say that? But because that's the job. Mm-hmm. It's just like a corporation or a wing of Global Corp, James, right? Who's the main guy? Is it the president of the company? Does he have a say in how the company works? No. The CEO, the CFO, and the stockholders make all the real decisions. So it's really nothing to get too excited about. However, there is a certain element of sticking it to him and taking out Clinton and somehow helping Bernie get the nomination that is a little satisfying to people. Whether that's right or wrong and it's a total illusion or not, I can see that.
Yeah. I mean, it is hard to deny that it is. I mean, it is just so horrific to contemplate another Clinton presidency that, yes, almost anything would seem better in comparison. So, yeah, I understand why people can get excited by these things, but I think that's the whole point. Put up just monsters, and then people will be excited when they find someone who isn't quite as monstrous.
Well, and you know this too, James, isn't Bernie and Trump the steam valve that America needed? Because we've had it, we're mad as hell, we don't want to take it anymore, and this is the big middle finger to the establishment, and that's what everybody says and why they support Trump, and maybe why they support Sanders. But it does, you know, relieve the pressure. It's like a pressure valve, a steam valve that releases the massive amount of pressure that is happening in this country because people just can't stand how things are going down. So they'll do this for, what has this election been going, 3, 4, 5, 6 years now? And then they'll go vote or something, and they'll feel a little bit better about it, and they'll go to sleep for a few years, and then the next distraction or steam valve will pop up. And you know, this is how they keep us, you know, in the herd gate going right to slaughter.
But let's not leave people hanging on that, because obviously what you were talking about before is so much more important, the local activism that people can get involved in that can make an actual difference to their everyday lives rather than putting all their identity and energy into this four-year, you know, carnival circus. Let's talk about that local activism. I mean, obviously, as you've said, you've moved from Austin to Atlanta to Seattle. You've seen some very different locales, but maybe some of the same issues. What are some of the exciting, hopeful things that you've seen in terms of local activism in these various places?
Yeah, it's all talk. There really isn't much. And one of the things I noticed in Atlanta was that every single group, and that's another reason I got out of there, every single group was subverted and controlled. And I don't want to dim people's hopes. Hope is kind of a bad word. Get off the hopium, folks. But, you know, I really believe that 300 people could change everything, and 1,000 people can make it so. And this is why the divide and rule aspect of media and society and then throw in some distractions is so important and key to, I call them Global Corp. Some people call them the New World Order of the elites. It's really important to them to keep this going. So they find new wedges to put between us, and they create and empower special interest groups that really are demanding, because it's all in the solutions. They're demanding the same things that the very top 1% of the 1% at Global Corp really want, which is what? Taxing the rich. Well, they don't care, because if you're in the 1% of the 1%, you don't have to pay taxes. So this is a way to take out the competition for them. To answer your question, you know, we look at the food revolution, and it's a perfect example of what happens when people aren't divided and conquered and divided and ruled, and where they get together and they just demand that something actually happens rather than writing letters to your congressman or going and showing up with a placard. So when you begin to do that, and you know how that really, in my opinion, James, how that really kicked off and became something valuable and important as it's evolving here right around us, was that people decided to vote with their money. And they were saying, I'm just not going to go to McDonald's anymore. And then one of the things I was proud of in Atlanta, the neighborhood we lived in and a bunch of neighborhoods hooked together, had locked out the box stores, locked out the chain restaurants, no 7-Elevens, no Dunkin' Donuts, if people know what that is, no McDonald's, no Walmarts, and even no new cell towers. So they were really banding together in those neighborhoods to do that. And you know what? Let's get back to the regressive nature of progressivism, because those are the neighborhoods that everyone wants to live in. those are the neighborhoods that people pay the high rents in. They just don't want to be in these over-conglomerate neighborhoods anymore. So we can see how that works. But ultimately, it wasn't the protesting. It wasn't, you know, rhetoric on a radio show. It wasn't, you know, a creative poster or something like that. It wasn't a magic bullet of any kind. It was people just saying, I'm not going to pay for that anymore. Now, this is now they've taken that and run with it and used it against us. See how, again, they're not be all end all, but they work on this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So we need to keep up here in the race. So now you put in a Whole Foods in a neighborhood and it completely wrecks the entire neighborhood. Rents are going up. All the people that have lived there their whole lives are getting out. And I think in a way there's kind of a relation to this, to what's going on in Burns, Oregon right now with those ranchers, that ultimately to over centralize our food and centralize everything. And that's why I always say, James, the ultimate solution to all of this is to decentralize and repeal that, because all laws are selectively enforced, and that goes for regulations and political in nature and for old ladies crossing the street. So please help an old lady cross the street. You know, ultimately we keep making the same mistakes over and over again, and they're doing some newer things. But if we want to band together, it's just very simple. I've said this on your show before. Vote with your money. Put your money where your mouth is. Your money is your life force. And I put it in quotations, money, because we can have a long discussion about what money is, right? But let's make sure that what we work for, what we gather together in our nest, call it money, call it credits, you know, call it barterable goods, that's where it's going to change. And it's not even so much a voting for what we want, which is clean food, if we're talking about the food revolution. It's not voting for the things you're against. So being an educated, you know, consumers have been lambasted and given a bad name, and consumerism is just such a horrible thing. Really, that's where your power is.
Right, right. I just think, let's call them customers. But yeah, no, exactly. People purchase and they give their accumulated, as you say, their life force that they've spent their time and energy making this money one way or another, and they're going to give it to the corporations they're fighting against. I mean, yeah, there was a great article up on Land Destroyer Report a few years ago that put this in a way that I thought was just great, where they were talking about some, you know, I can't remember, some rally that was going on in Washington at the time. And it was talking about all the people who were going to, you know, get together and they were going to drive to Washington and, of course, you know, fill up on, you know, the some of the Seven Sisters oil companies to get there and to eat fast food on the way to get there. And then they're going to stand there with their placards and wave them in the air for a few hours. And then they're going to get back, go back home to the, you know, their houses and watch the results on the cable news networks. I mean, it's just, you're feeding into the system at every point. But again, the activism can be almost like an escape valve. It's the kind of release from your life that makes you feel like you've done something rather than actually done something. So yes, I think it is absolutely what you put your time, energy, effort, and money into that will actually make a difference in the end. Food revolution's the obvious one, and I think it is one that is having an obvious effect. Are there other places, other pressure points where people can do that?
Well, the pharma revolution is also pretty big. I can tell you this, that when I lived in Texas and we had the 300 to 1,000 people we needed, we did accomplish major initiatives or counter initiatives to legislation in the codifying, anti-freedom codifying that was happening in not just in Austin, but in Texas. So we won the toll road battle. That would be the NAFTA corridor that everyone talked about. We beat them, and it took 2 years, and it was a war of attrition. We beat TxDOT. We beat the Cintra, the king of spends banks. We beat all those guys. We totally won that. Okay. Also in Texas, you know, unauthorized checkpoints or unconstitutional DUI checkpoints, that kind of thing. We won that, though. Again, it's a border state, so you know it's a trade off. There's the 100-mile Department of Homeland Security border, which is constitutionalists here in America, which, you know, is a whole nother issue. We won the Gardasil argument. Okay, that passed and it got signed by Perry ultimately, but it still was rebuked and revoked, and it was an embarrassing moment for the Perry administration in Texas. We also won No Child Left Behind. there. No Child Left Behind had put through the New Freedom Initiative that there would be forced testing and subsequent drugging of children in Texas, and we beat them on that. So, I mean, I'm an old warrior who has won a lot of these battles, and I got to tell you, I'm a little depressed because now people don't fight battles, they write headlines, and headlines aren't going to do it. You actually have to get up with warm bodies. You have to put pressure on both the media. You have to have it. It's got to be three-pronged, right? So if you guys are doing this in your cities, this is what you need. You need somebody to take on the media and organize that head, somebody to take on the government and the legislature and organize that front, and somebody to organize the people. And when you have those three things come together, James, you're going to often find victories. So the distractions, the living your life on social media, not going to cut it. You actually have to go out and do stuff.
What, you mean merely retweeting something isn't going to change the face of the world as we know it?
Not unless you're Beyonce, no.
Oh, unfortunately, yes. Yeah, good point. Well, okay, so I know that there are Corbett Report listeners in your neck of the woods. What if they want to get involved in what you're doing? What do you suggest?
Write me at jackblood@hotmail.com. Yeah, I'm the guy with the Hotmail account. And I'll put you on my newsletter. And if you're specifically in the Pacific Northwest, because we also have actions going on in Portland as well, we'll let you know and alert you to what we need. Ultimately, my dream was to put together something called Project 1000, because as I said, 1000 people can change everything. And I learned this playing music when I lived in Hollywood. 300 people going to every show would get a band signed. You know, so it's even just the illusion of success sometimes that equals success. So write me at jackblood@hotmail.com or message me on Facebook at Jackblood or Radio Free Blood, and we'll you know, synergize with you and let you know when we have something. We're not wasting time. We're not here to get publicity and jump in front of the news cameras, James. We're here to actually put pressure on people that make decisions so that those that are out there putting their finger in the wind looking for consensus from the people will hear our consensus louder and first.
Nice. Well, I wasn't expecting to go down this path with this conversation, but I'm glad we did. But I would be remiss in my duties if I didn't pick your brain as one of the people I know out there who follows the news probably even more voraciously than I do. What news stories are trending or that you have caught your eye that are of interest to you lately?
Well, you know what? You're covering the number one story. And as usual, James Corbett, you've done an exemplary job covering the Zika virus.
Actually, John Rappaport did an exemplary job. I'm just helping to get some attention on what he's talking about.
And he's a go-to source on it. And like him, I'm not taking any credit, but I also have a history of striking down the hysteria and fear porn propaganda. By the way, that's the name of my band. If you guys want to see us in the Northwest, we've got a new band named Fear Porn, which I think is appropriate. But yeah. We stood up on SARS back in 2003, and you know, then I was on a 50,000-watt middle-of-the-dial station, 990 AM, and we got taken on by the big Clear Channel station who said that we were hurting America by saying what we were saying, and it turned out that we were right. And we also tamped down and called for reason and blew out the illusion of the swine flu, the pig flu. If you remember, that started in a farm in Mexico, in a massive corporate pig farm, and they needed an excuse for all the sickness and disease that thing caused, right? It's cost-benefit analysis, because now you have an excuse, and I know this is where Rappaport is going, and it's an excuse for the land grab, the pesticides, and everything else that's going on in Central and South America, if not the entire world. It's just everything, like cancer and cancer research, everything is an excuse for living in this toxic waste environment that we find ourselves in. So they have to come up with, so that's the first level of cost-benefit analysis. But then, as you mentioned in your report, you know, there's vaccine, there's medical research, there's, you know, advertising campaigns. Man, that thing has already, it's only been out for days, it's already expanded into a $1 trillion industry. So yeah, yeah, the early reports, as you mentioned, as John Rappaport mentions, and I'd love to delve into this for a second or two more if you let me, the initial reports of the outbreak were completely falsified. And big surprise, what happened to Ebola last year? Do you know that Obama got up in his STFU, as I call it, the State of the Union, it's his final one, and claimed to have saved us from Ebola? You know? And there was no Ebola. And as far as we could tell, it was coming. This is the chicken and the egg, right? It was coming from the vaccines. And the vaccines are, of course, the solution to the Ebola. And it just disappeared. And because we live in this fast food culture, right? Who remembers Ebola last year and how people were freaking out about that? So ultimately, you know, there we go. There we are. But the point I did want to make was I thought it was fascinating how mainstream media, if you want to call it that, you know, the London Daily Mail and some pretty big publications and websites were putting out this alternative theory that the Zika virus came from GMO mosquitoes in order to sell the virus. And we immediately started debunking that because I thought it was really odd that all of a sudden this was the biggest story in news and alternative news, which simply justifies and then I guess helps prove that there is such a thing as a Zika virus, right?
There you go. Yeah. It's the cheese in the mousetrap. If you take the cheese, you're caught.
It's really, that makes it harder than ever to navigate current events and news than ever before. But we'll see that this will dissipate into nothing. I think where people are coming from, though, especially when we see that there is a frozen monkey virus put into the virus, massive virus bank by the Rockefeller Foundation, the Zika virus, which comes from monkeys in Uganda from the 40s, right? That they froze this thing and it can easily, and I'm sure has been weaponized. I think at some point people go, okay, they're all fake. I'm not falling for this hysteria, but how do I know this one isn't the real one?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and that's hard. I don't even have an answer to that. Maybe the next one is the real one.
Yeah. And I think we'll have to actually look for actual evidence of it at least being a real thing. And that would be the first step, I would say. But you're exactly right. I mean, this is the boy who cried wolf, and people will stop believing them eventually. But yeah, I mean, they really can come slip in with a bioweapon at some point. And
when that brings us to, but we got to get this in. That brings us to why would the elites unleash? Why would Global Corp at the top 1% of the 1%, why would they unleash something that would hurt themselves?
Well, they wouldn't, of course. They would have the antidote, I would assume. If they weaponized it, I'm sure they would have the antidote.
Well, the antidote is that the people eating the bad food and living in the toxic sludge have low immune systems and therefore could be affected from a small, highly infectious virus that only attacks people with low immune systems. So I actually interviewed the White House chef that was just about a month ago, James, and I didn't expect him to start throwing all this out, but we got into it. He talked about how Hillary Clinton was beating, physically abusing Bill Clinton at the dinner table, some stuff like that. Right?
Sounds about right, yeah.
But then he got into, and I didn't even prompt him, don't eat anything from a can because you'll get Alzheimer's from the aluminum in the can. Now this is for people that are into chemtrails and know that aluminum is in the chemtrails and aluminum is in our water and aluminum is everywhere. You know, that could be a really big problem. And this is why we're seeing massive amounts of Alzheimer's as they've diagnosed it. He also said that the president and the first lady had their own food source on grounds, which is locked under guard and doesn't isn't subject to air or water or any of the other extraneous food quotients that make the rest of us sick. So if the elites have macrobiotic chefs, if they're eating their own real food, non-GMO, blah, 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 blah food, and they're keeping their immune systems high, maybe we should be doing the same thing. You could save yourself by doing it. And I'm not selling a product by saying this. It's just common sense.
Yeah.
So the elites won't poison themselves and they won't hurt themselves if only people that shop at Walmart to get their food, you know, are affected.
I must admit, I always take a bit of Schadenfreude when I'm looking at some congressional testimony by one of these Congress critters, and I see them drinking a Diet Coke and thinking, you don't really know it.
You're not in on it. Yeah.
You're not in on it.
If they didn't tell you.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, good to keep in mind and good to know. I would love to hear that interview. I didn't hear it. Is it online?
I don't label anything, and you'll have to go and tear through my entire showreel, but I have been, if a second I get some time, that interview was so awesome. Yeah. I definitely have to make it available for people. And he also invited me. His mom's has a major restaurant in New Orleans, and if there's lines around the block, I get to go through the back door with a presidential chef. You see, this is one of the perks of my job, James.
Ooh, wow. You're an insider now. All right. Awesome. Okay, I think we're going to wrap it up here. Once again, deadlinelive.info, Radio Free Blood on Facebook. Any other coordinates you want to give people?
Well,
jackblood@hotmail.com?
Just hit me, jackblood@hotmail.com. We'll put you on our, we have like a monthly newsletter. It's completely scrabbled. It looks kind of funky, but you're going to get a lot of information. I don't have like a really good program to do the newsletter, James, nor do I want one. So it's really handwritten from me to you, jackblood@hotmail.com. And please, if you can, throw in a small donation or something to keep us going. That would be wonderful. And we'll keep you abreast to what we're doing. And then, of course, not that you need it, but there'll be a little James Corbett in there every once in a while, too.
Awesome. All right, good stuff. Keep at it. Let's talk again sooner than the last time.
Stay bold, brother.
Take care.